Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org under the Public Affairs Program, stream live, or on the WDIY app. Today is October 30th, 2024. The markets were down today with the Dow closing at 42,141, the NASDAQ at 18,607, and the S&P at 5,813. Tonight, scary not knowing what questions to ask. That if regular listeners will know, I always worry about the questions you don't ask. So tonight, in honor of Halloween, we'll say scary not knowing what questions to ask, and we're going to go through what some of those might be. So we're going to see if we can help with that. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And at this point, we aren't taking calls, but we may as the show continues. So for now, we're just going to jump right into the topic. If you do have questions, you can always send those through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com. That's yourfinancialchoices.com. So as I said, the biggest worry I have for clients is the questions you don't know to ask and what that could mean. It can mean a client acting on their own and not understanding the ramifications of that action. And regular listeners know I always talk about being proactive and not reactive. And what questions might one not know to ask? And when I say be proactive, not reactive, when we are in front of our decisions, we have more options. When we are after our decisions, we have fewer options. Let me give you just a quick example that always stands out for me. Well, I'll give you two examples that stand out for me in my career. I had a young couple come to me once. They weren't existing clients. I forgot how they even found me. Maybe I was doing the radio show back then. I don't remember. But they came to me and they were in the middle of buying a house, and they found another house before they sold their existing home. So they were selling a house, buying a new house, and the sale of their existing home wasn't going through until after the purchase of their new home. So they needed some funds that they didn't have from their existing home, and they took the money out of their retirement accounts. By the time they came to me, some time had passed, and what was sad was they took money out of their retirement accounts for the down payment on the new house, and that was a taxable transaction. It was a distribution from an IRA account or retirement account, income taxable. And in this situation, it ended up being subject to a 10% penalty because they were under age 59 and a half, and it was early withdrawal, an early withdrawal penalty. They settled, so they bought their new house. They settled on their own home within 30 days, I think, of buying the new home, within 30 days. So they had the proceeds from their old home within 30 days. What some people might not realize is there is a rule, it's called the rollover rule, that if you take money out of a retirement account and put it back within 60 days, it's not deemed a distribution. So these people came to me after the fact. If they had come sooner, or if they had come before they did this, there could have been other options. They might have had, you know, an option to do a home equity loan or a bridge loan or something like that on their existing home. But if they had no other option but to take money out of the retirement account, as long as they returned it within the 60 days, it would not have been deemed a distribution. Now, when you do something like this, let's pretend you take out $100,000, but because it's an early distribution and there's a mandatory withholding, then they might have cleared, let's say it's $80,000, they had 20% withholding, they cleared $80,000, they used $80,000 for the, you know, down payment, whatever it might be. To return the money within the 60 days, they would have to return the whole $100,000. Now, the $20,000 went automatically to the IRS. And you might think that's money lost, but it's not, because then you would get it refunded on your tax return if you didn't owe, you know, that much in taxes. So you would get that money back. So it's not totally lost. And then that would just replenish your cash because you used $100,000 of your own money to put back into the IRA. Okay, 60-day rule. They could have avoided, number one, income taxes and a 10% penalty. That's being in front of your decision. Because they didn't know, They were young, they didn't know. And sometimes people get caught up in decision making. And for me, what's really unfortunate in these circumstances is who was guiding them, who was helping them. And there are a lot of professionals involved in a home buying circumstances, home buying situation. Did no one understand how this young couple was funding the down payment? Or did the people who were in their circle as part of this decision-making not know the rules themselves? So again, the questions you don't know to ask, that to me is just so unfortunate, which is why I love doing this show, to hopefully bring some education to listeners about, you may not even know what questions to ask, but you hone your instincts and your tummy, your gut feeling. My mother always said, trust your tummy. So that you kind of know, even if you don't know something, you say, hey, maybe I need to pause here. Maybe I need to take a minute and think about if there's other options. Another example I always like to use, and again, this is going way back, had a couple who had retired. And then, of course, when you retire, you start looking around your house and you see, oh, we have renovations to do. We have improvements to do. And their logic in their mind was, hey, we can take money out of our retirement accounts because while we were working, we were saving and saving. And this is what our retirement money is for. And in this particular circumstance, they wanted to do a renovation. They didn't want to take out any mortgage or home equity loan or line of credit. They didn't want to pay anything like interest on this loan when they had all this other money. Well, what they didn't realize, and luckily in this case, they were clients and they came to me in front of their decision. They were planning on taking the money out of the retirement account. And what would have happened in their retirement years? They've retired. They now have Social Security they're getting. Regular listeners know Social Security is included in taxable income based on the other income on your return. It's a circular calculation. The more income you have on your return, the more your Social Security may be included. Up to 85% of your Social Security could be included in taxable income. So in this circumstance, I said to them, if you take the money out of the retirement accounts, your income escalates, and now a lot of your Social Security is taxable, as is included in taxable income. And now where you may have not paid it very much income tax, no income tax, or 12% income tax, whatever it was back then, instead, it was almost double because the income was almost going to double because 85% of the Social Security is now going to be included when it wasn't at all before. I said to them, let's go in, you do a line of credit. The interest rate at that time wasn't that bad. The difference in the cost of the credit was so much less than the cost of this income tax consequence that that's what they did. And I said, we can schedule this to have this paid off within, it was like 14 months. We did it over, let's say, December of, you know, year one, paid some in year two, and then year three with those distributions. We timed out the distributions from the retirement accounts to repay the loan in record time where they didn't have that much interest expense. And with minimal tax cost. All right. in front of the decisions, more options. As we continue the show, we're going to talk about maybe some of those questions that you may not know to ask. I don't want you to be scared. We're going to help you see them through. We will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY members have exclusive access to our weekly member ticket giveaway. That's a new drawing every week for the best events the Lehigh Valley has to offer. Concerts, festivals, film screenings, theater performances, and more. Last year, WDIY gave away over 2,000 tickets to our members. So don't miss your chance. Become a WDIY member today. Call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or visit wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. If you have questions, you could submit those through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com, yourfinancialchoices.com. Tonight, scary not knowing what questions to ask. So we're going to kind of go through those. So I gave a couple examples of why it's so important to be in front of your decisions and hone your instincts around when you should ask questions or not. And this is so that if you don't know what question to ask, you still know, hey, let's pause. Maybe we need to get some help and think this through. So let's break this down into the elements of your financial life. So I always talk about the elements of your financial life: cash flow, investments, retirement, taxes, risk management, and estate planning. So I'm just going to give you a few examples. So when we talk about cash flow, someone might say, I like having cash reserves. That's a great, you know, yay, positive aspect of financial planning. Make sure you have a good cash reserves. We call that emergency reserves. I like it to be considered emergency reserves. And then the question might be, how much cash reserves do I need? That could be a question. How much do I need? Instead of just hoarding all that money into cash, that may not be working for you as well as it should be. So you want to consider and think about, how much cash reserves do you need? And the other question you'd want to ask is, can I get better returns than perhaps your checking account or your traditional savings account? So what should the emergency reserves be? And can I get a better rate than just the simple bank account? So again, being kind of in front of your decisions, instead of just continuing to hoard the cash, which, you know, I have clients who do and they like it. And hey, if it that helps them sleep at night, that's one thing. But the next question would be, what interest rate are you getting on that cash you're sitting on? And how much do you really need? So, for example, if we talk about, let's pretend you're comfortable with a 6-month cash reserve and you spend about, you know, $4,000 a month, 4 times 6 months is $24,000. Typically, I'm looking to cover, you know, non-discretionary expenses. So let's say in my story, we need $24,000 and we find out you have $100,000 of cash in the bank. Wow. Well, we have to first find out why you're comfortable with that much money. Do you need that much money? And, you know, talk that through. And if you're okay with kind of keeping the $24,000 and doing something else with the rest, then you could talk about maybe getting it to work and investing it possibly. Okay. But short of that, or if you say, hey, that's what I have to have, that's what I want to have, then we say, what interest rate are you getting? And if you tell me 0.015, I'm going to say, especially in the current interest rate environment, even when we see interest rates coming down, there still could be a lot of other opportunities for you to make that money work. You know, could be 3 months, 6 months, or even a year out before the rates come down such that it would be 0.015 again. So you can look at online savings banks. You can look at treasury bills, which may be available to you through, you know, an investment advisor or directly on treasurydirect.gov. You could check out to see if there could be something that could get your cash a little bit more return than just sitting there. So that is a good question to ask. Here's another comment. I am charitably inclined and give generously. I love that. I support that. I love when people can be generous and philanthropic. It's all wonderful. But there could be some questions you need to ask yourself that might be a little scary in that regard as well. Number one, should you be charitably inclined? Do you have enough money for your own living? Do you have enough money for your retirement years in the event, you know, you need assisted living or nursing care? So you want to make sure that that charitable giving fits in with your long-term, what I'll call long-term retirement / estate plan. And if then you certainly can, you know, support charitable giving, then the next question might be, what are my charitable giving options? There are a lot of different ways to give and be charitably inclined that could be smarter than what you're doing, which might be writing a check out of your checkbook. So what are those charitable giving options? It's not a scary question, but it's a question that you may not have known to ask, that there could be like a slew of options for you. There's a number of ways to give charitably. I always say to people, if you want to know how to be charitably inclined, I can give you some options. So, and I've talked about that on prior shows. In fact, just a few weeks ago, we did a show on charitable giving, and you can find those podcasts on WDIY.org under public affairs or on yourfinancialchoices.com or on, you know, many streaming services. You can just say Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert and charitable giving, and the show could pop up. All right. So ask yourself, are you doing your charitable giving in the smartest way? Because think about it, people. If you could do it in a more efficient way or a more cash flow efficient way, a better tax efficient way, why wouldn't you? That's extra money that might land in your pocket to give more away or to pass on to your heirs. So it's about, you know, doing things, you know, thinking it through. All right. Here's one, cash flow again. I was just let go from work and I have to have health insurance, so I'm going to take COBRA. And someone takes COBRA, and COBRA, now you're paying, you know, basically what it's costing probably the employer to cover that insurance. It might be your only option. You might not have other options. Really? Maybe. Maybe you have other options. So let's talk about what those other options might be. You might have an option with a spouse if you're married. You might have an option with the Marketplace or the Affordable Care Act, or if, as Pennsylvania residents, have penny.com. So you could have other options and explore those. And those options may not be available to you like currently. Maybe you got let go in October and you have high income for 2024, and going on the Marketplace or penny.com, the Affordable Care Act, healthcare.gov may not give you the best cost, but maybe next year, if you stay unemployed, maybe, you know, you were close to retirement anyway and they let you go. And so next year you decide, hey, I'm just going to fully retire. Well, then you could explore some of these other options, because you may get tax credits to help offset the cost of the health insurance. So instead of paying $2,000 a month, maybe you're paying, you know, $400 a month. It all depends on your income. So don't be afraid to ask or check that out. Here's another one. I'm retired and taking money out of my retirement accounts because that's what I save for, and which is was my example earlier. Instead, the question could be, how do I fund my cash flow in retirement? How do I fund my cash flow in retirement? The other comment might be, I have no idea how much I spend. So what am I going to do? I have no idea. When maybe the question could be, what are simple ways I can manage a budget? So I'll talk about that when we come back for this from this next break. But this is kind of the cash flow questions to ask and to not be afraid. Don't be scared about asking these questions. I love curious people, and I love when you kind of engage in your financial life and try to figure these things out. And of course, working with an advisor is always nice, because we can help put the guardrails on, make sure that you understand all the options. And again, maybe sometimes even answer those questions you don't know to ask, so that you can understand all the options that are in front of you. Okay, if you have questions, you can send those through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. We will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1, and you can also listen on the WDIY app. We are talking about scary, not knowing what questions to ask, and kind of just throwing out some ideas. Again, it's about honing your instincts to ask questions. People will say, gosh, Lori, you know, how do you know so much? And I say, because I'm not afraid to ask questions. I always think I know nothing. And so I like to inquire a lot. And that's how you learn. So when I gave some other items about cash flow, like how do I fund my cash flow in retirement? Why is that an important question? What does it mean to be in front of it? Because sometimes people think, oh, I've retired and now I'm going to start taking money out of my retirement account. Or they might say, I don't know how I'm spending. So as far as funding your cash flow, there could be a number of options. And I will talk about that when I get down to the retirement section of the topic tonight as well, because we kind of have to take an inventory of what are our resources in retirement. Is it going to be pensions, Social Security, IRAs, 401ks, bank accounts, brokerage accounts, annuities? Where are we going to get that money for our retirement? And we're going to talk about that in the retirement section and what questions to ask. And the other thing, item with cash flow might be, I don't know how much I spend. And I think quite often people are afraid to have a budget. They don't want a budget. They don't like to be restricted by a budget. It overwhelms them. Well, the easiest way to think about this, and I love this method, when I was introduced to it at Valley National when I started there almost 25 years ago, was the funnel method, where you put your resources into a savings account and you move over once a month what you think your anticipated spending is. So you kind of have to have an idea of what your spending is. So in my example earlier, we said $4,000. So we put our monthly money into our savings account. We move over $4,000 a month into our checking account. And as we, write our bills, does our checking account build up or is it get smaller and smaller? So that's how we start to monitor what we think we're spending. It gives us a good bellwether as to whether we're staying within our budget or not. You have to factor in sometimes that not all expenses are monthly. Sometimes we pay our auto insurance semi-annually or quarterly, or if you own a home, you might pay your real estate taxes at different times. So you do have to understand there's a little bit of ebb and flow to it, but it really is kind of a great way to budget without budgeting. It's like watching carbohydrates when you're dieting. Your carbs, you just kind of keep them at a steady level, and chances are you'll lose weight. If you go over one day a tiny bit or go under a tiny bit, it could impact it, but you just kind of try to stay steady. Okay, so let's talk about what kind of questions might we ask, and don't be scared to ask, about investments. I love when people come in and they say, oh, my retirement account, I never look at it. They kind of did that action of set it and forget it, and they never looked at it, which can really serve some people really well, meaning they set it and forget it and they forgot about it. And so they're not using it, they're not spending it, and the money's coming out of their paycheck automatically, and they're saving without thinking about it. So that's a true positive about that. But is it really the smartest thing to do? So yes, we like the set it and forget it, but not really the forget part. So we want to make sure that we understand what we have in that retirement account, because that could be really important. If you Let's pretend you agree at your employer to put money into a 401k, and sometimes the plans kind of have an automatic contribution these days that we didn't always have that. Or maybe you're in a plan that where the employer puts money in for you automatically. That's called a safe harbor plan. So you don't have to think about putting it in. Either way, usually a 401k will have investment options. And the investment options typically have a default option if you didn't go in and pick any particular investment strategy. And the default could be a stable value fund, you know, which is like, you know, practically cash, or a target date fund. A target retirement date fund could be the default, where they say, okay, you're, you know, 25 in 2024, and we're going to plan this for 40 years. So we're going to put you in a 2064 target date fund. And what happens with a target date fund is it adjusts its risk tolerance over that time period. As you get closer to retirement, it becomes less risky as through time. So maybe a little bit more risky initially, less risky as we go on. That may not be accurate for you. It might not be the right thing. You might not want it that way. Maybe you have outside investments that you're taking a lot of risk with, a lot of equities, and maybe at work, that's where you're going to have your less risky assets, perhaps, because it's kind of ordinary income type of investments. So you really don't want to totally forget it. I love the forget that you're saving part, but don't forget what you're doing with the savings. So you want to make sure that there is that it's invested appropriately for your risk tolerance and your time horizon and the kind of account it is. And when I say what kind of account, and you heard me mention equities and, you know, kind of looking at outside accounts, you don't want to look at your investments just like in a bubble. You want to look at your overall portfolio. Because I like to look at the geography of the investments, and I've been talking about this for as long as I've been an advisor, that people, before people were talking about it, and that is, we want to look at the geography of the investments because there are tax-favored treatment on certain investments outside of retirement accounts. So if I have an individual account, a joint account, we call it a brokerage account or non-qualified money, that if it's invested in equities, stocks, you know, companies you're familiar with that we hear about in the stock market, those have tax-favored treatment on most dividends. Those are called qualified dividends, and tax-favored treatment on gains, long-term capital gains. They are subject to what we call the capital gains tax rate. So I really like the geography to have the tax-favored treatment in the non-retirement accounts. And then in the retirement accounts, if I'm going to skew something to fixed income, I want to skew my retirement account that way, perhaps, or at least look at it, again, as part of my overall allocation. This is just education, folks, so you have to, you know, understand your own situation and work with an advisor. I'm just giving you things to think about tonight, not any specific recommendations. But the retirement accounts, the 401k, if it's on a pre-tax basis, or the 403b on a pre-tax basis, we get a tax deduction today, but then eventually as it grows at ordinary income tax rates. And when we take money out of it, it's all taxed at ordinary income tax rates. So when we look at the investments on fixed income is like bonds, that pays ordinary income. Bonds, CDs, that type of investment pays interest income, which is ordinary income. And the money that we invest in our 401k, it doesn't matter if it's equities or bonds, it all is going to come out as ordinary income. On the pre-tax dollars, ordinary income, all comes out as ordinary income. So if I'm going to skew something in my portfolio, when I look at the geography, I would rather see kind of my fixed income piece over there. Now, it doesn't mean I don't have equities in my retirement account, especially if I'm young. I might have a lot of equities in my retirement account. As we get older, we may or may not, you know, change that allocation. But so there still could be equities. It still could be growing. I don't have a problem with that. I'm just saying, look at the geography of your investments. Don't be scared. Ask the question, how am I allocated? Where am I? What's my risk tolerance? Has it changed over the years? Has my risk tolerance changed depending on my age? Maybe, maybe not. I don't say your age should dictate your risk tolerance. I don't believe that. So ask those questions. Folks, we are at the halfway point. If you have questions, you can submit those through yourfinancialchoices.com. We will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You are listening to Your Financial Choices, and we are talking about scary not knowing what questions to ask and trying to just kind of give you some ideas to ruminate with when you're looking at your financial decisions to help you be in front of them versus trying to get yourself out of a bad decision on the other side. And we had a client today we were talking with, and she said, you know, I'm sorry to, you know, send this stuff over kind of last minute. She has some big decisions to make. And she said, I'm sorry to send this over last minute. And we said, no problem at all. We'd rather you send them over last minute and be in front of that decision than you, you know, acting on your own, worrying about bothering us, and then, you know, coming to us after the fact when a decision was already made. We have decisions, more options on the front end. So to wrap up the questions you might want to ask on investments, remember I also referred to risk tolerance and risk. Do I understand risk? We will have a separate show on this, you know, in the future. I'm trying to arrange a couple guests for that. So I think it's important to understand risk. You know, people think they don't want to take risk in their portfolio, and maybe they think, oh, I'm going to, you know, stay in cash. I don't want any risk. And they don't diversify. They, you know, they don't look for any kind of growth stocks. And the issue is, sometimes we need to take a little risk to get performance out of our portfolio to help sustain us in our retirement years or to help fund that cash flow. And I will say to clients, do you need all of your money tomorrow? Do you need all of it tomorrow? Because if you don't want to take risk and you need it all tomorrow, I understand. But if you, I'm going to make up a number. Let's pretend you have $1 million and you never take money out of your portfolio. Did you really need it all tomorrow to the point where you take no risk with it? So do you want that to work for you a little bit? And diversification is the key here. Diversification is very, very important because there are risks you take by keeping it in cash. And basically, inflation risk is one of those things. Interest rate risk is another risk. So we'll talk about those on a future show. But you have to understand what that means. Let's talk about retirement. What kind of questions might you not know to ask in retirement? Now, someone might say, you're going to think about retiring without considering if you can retire. So, you know, I want to retire. You think in your head, oh, I can retire. It's the age I'm going to retire. But you really want to ask the question, can I retire? And what will that look like? Because you kind of have to know how you're going to manage in retirement. Don't get caught up by those ages. I did a show last week on ages, and we have to be careful. Sometimes people think because you can file for Social Security at age 62, it's really the early filing. Some people think that 62 is the age of retirement. No, that's not so. Some people think it's age 65 because it's Medicare age. 65, they think, oh, I can retire. I have to retire at 65. Sometimes company pensions wouldn't start till 65. Whatever gets in your head that you think retirement age is 62 or 65, just wipe that out of your memory. Because what is the age you can retire is independent of any of that. It's based on your own set of circumstances. because you may be able to retire at 55. You may not be able to retire until 70. It all depends on what your retirement projection might look like. So it's really important to kind of be in front of that decision. And the sooner you're in front of it, the better, because then you have a longer runway to kind of reach those goals that you want to hit. If someone comes to me at 63 and says, I want to retire next year, and they don't have any money, well, yeah, that's a little hard to make that work. You might have to work a little longer. And I've had to tell people they've had to work a little bit longer sometimes. And then, of course, there's people who think they have to keep working. And I say, you could have already retired 2 years ago because, you know, they had plenty of funds. So you want to ask, can I retire? What will that look like? And what will that look like will depend on a number of factors. So, which again, raise those questions. Don't be afraid to ask them, when should I file for Social Security? That is a really good question. Don't make an assumption that when you retire, you have to file for Social Security. It may not be true for your circumstances. You may already have a pension, or maybe you don't have a pension, but you have, you know, a whole bucket of money, you know, on the side somewhere. Then you may not want to file for Social Security for several reasons. One, it might open the door for certain tax planning applications, like a IRA conversion to a Roth. It may open the door for you to realize some long-term capital gains at zero income tax, because maybe when you retire, you're going to be in a very low income situation and capital gains tax rates can be zero in the 12% tax bracket, long-term capital gains tax rates. So, you know, filing for Social Security can have implications on, yes, on cash flow. You might not have the cash flow, but where might else you get cash flow, and what other opportunities might be available to you if you don't file? Recall my story at the beginning of the show when I said this particular couple wanted to take money out of their retirement accounts to pay for, you know, improvements. But I said, it's going to impact your taxable Social Security. So let me give an example, try to give you a simple example. By adding at their income level, let's pretend we don't know exactly what that is, but in my calculations, this is what's going to happen. When we add $10,000 to the tax return in, you know, IRA distributions in my story, it would have added maybe $8,500 of taxable Social Security. There's thresholds, there's tiers of when Social Security is taxable. So in essence, we put $10,000 onto the return, and it could actually look like $18,500 in my very simple, basic example to try to demonstrate what I'm talking about. So that's why we want to be careful when we collect Social Security and what other income we put on the tax return. So when we talk about how are we going to fund your retirement, we want to play with those numbers. At some point, it might not matter as much, because at age 73, we have a required minimum distribution. And sometimes that automatically throws people into the highest inclusion of Social Security income. And at that point, then I'm no longer worrying about conversions or long-term capital gains at zero, maybe, but I might be playing a 22% tax bracket instead. Once we already hit 85% inclusion in Social Security, now I'm looking for the next thing I can play with. Okay. So you want to understand what that looks like, either before you retire, or even when you retire, before you go file for something like Social Security. Also, you have to understand how Medicare premiums work. So at age 65, you could be eligible for Medicare if you don't have any other qualified health insurance. If one spouse is still working, you might be able to go on their plan. Don't assume you have to go on Medicare, because if you have qualified coverage through a spouse, you don't have to go on Medicare. You'd want to explore. This is one of those, again, questions you need to ask that you might not have known to ask. Does it make sense for you to go on Medicare, or does it make sense for you to go on your spouse's plan? Why might it make a difference? If your spouse is a high earner, a really high earner, if you go on Medicare, you could be paying like top dollar for the Medicare premiums. Medicare premiums are assessed based on your income level for your filing status. So if the standard Medicare premium is about $172, For married filing joint, the income threshold, I'm going to just throw out a number, might be like $204,000. Well, if you have a spouse who's a physician or, you know, business owner, whatever, and their income is like $450,000, well, you could end up paying, and I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, like three times that premium of $172,000. It could be three times that. And in the end, that might be more expensive than going on your spouse's retirement account. I mean, on your spouse's medical at work. Okay? So don't assume you have to go on Medicare at 65 if you have other qualified health insurance through a spouse. It may make sense to do the math and work through the numbers and see what makes sense. Okay? Because those Medicare premiums could go up more than the standard amount. It depends on how much income is on the tax return. Other questions that one might have that you might, you know, that we're seeing fewer and fewer of is pension options. So not as many people have pensions that we used to have, but there are still people who do and have pension decisions to make. And quite often, I'm surprised about how often people don't understand what the pension options are when we talk about joint life, single life, and what all that means. And if you're not really paying attention and your employer provides you with an illustration of your pension options, if you don't look carefully or see them through, you may miss out on opportunities. So, for example, the single life option always will reflect like the highest benefit, the highest monthly benefit. And you might think that looks pretty good. Well, if you choose a single life option, if you're married, the spouse has to sign off on that. But let's pretend you choose the single life option because you think it's, you know, so great to get that extra money. If you died the, you know, 2 days later, that pension's gone. That's done. You locked in that single life option. It's an irrevocable decision on your pension. So you want to be very careful, particularly if you have a spouse or someone who's relying on your benefit. Because another option might be, let's pretend you're not married, but you might have dependents who are relying on maybe some of your income, and you've built up this great pension. And they tell you your single life benefit is, you know, $4,000 a month, but there's another option called a term certain. And that term certain says, well, it's $4,000 a month, but for $3,850, you can have a term certain for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, whatever the term certain might be. And it's going to pay out that amount to you while you're alive, or if you die before that term, it could go to a beneficiary. So if you have someone who might be relying on some source of income from you and there's no life insurance, for example, then you could always choose a term certain option. Generally, we see when there is a spouse, there's joint survivorship options, and this joint survivorship option could be 100% benefit to a surviving spouse or 75% or 50%. Those percentages mean it's a percentage of the monthly amount that you're getting. So if the single life is 4,000 and the joint with 100% survivor might be 3,700. So I'm taking a haircut on that single life option. But if I died the next day, my spouse would get that 100%, $3,700 a month. So we, at $3,700, I take a haircut during my life. If I die, though, my surviving spouse continues on the 100% benefit. If 50% benefit, maybe it's $3,800. Then if I die, my spouse would get half the $3,800 or 75% of the $3,800. So you have to understand what those options are and what they mean. Another big question that you don't always know to ask is information about your 401k. So when we come back from this next break, I'm going to talk about some of those questions, which I think are some of the most critical questions you really need to know and ask about your retirement accounts. If you have questions, you can send those through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY News engages the Lehigh Valley with accurate, unbiased reporting from many sources and volunteer real voices. Listen to WDIY News during Morning Edition, Fresh Air, All Things Considered, and Weekend Edition, every day here on 88.1 FM, streaming on WDIY.org and the WDIY phone app. WDIY. Many choices, real voices.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1, also available on the WDIY app. Podcasts of prior shows are also available on WDIY.org, under Public Affairs, and on YourFinancialChoices.com. Questions can also be submitted there. Tonight, we are talking about scary, not knowing what questions to ask. We are in the midst of highlighting kind of retirement types of questions. When I have people call and say, hey, I'm retiring, I want to roll over my 401k, what do I need? Where do I send the check? I say, whoa. We have to first ask the question, what does that 401k look like? What is in that 401k? What's under the hood of that 401k? Why is this important? Because you have to understand the line items that we're looking for on the 401k. Line items such as, is there a loan on the 401k? Is there after-tax money in the 401k? Is there employer stock in the 401k? And these may be questions you don't know to ask, and they all have implications. And when we ask those questions, there's reasons we ask those questions. There's reasons we want to see that statement, because there could be certain tax advantages to any of those or tax disadvantages to any of those. We want to be very careful if you're separated from service and there's a loan on the 401k, because guess what? If you're separated from service, like terminated, and you have a loan on your 401k, they can deem that an automatic distribution. Do you really want that loan to be a distribution to you if you just lost your job and you might not have, you know, the money to pay the income tax on that? Okay, so be very, very careful. Also, what if you have after-tax money in that 401k? After-tax money that you roll over into an IRA. Now we have something called cost basis in an IRA, and it's an endless nightmare for the rest of your life and your beneficiary's life. So we want to be very careful if there's after-tax money in 401ks to not roll that over to an IRA. We have the opportunity still in the allowability to roll after-tax money into Roth IRAs. And so that's why it's really critical to know what's in the 401k or the 403b, to know what our options are with what we do with that money. And one of the biggest items that most people don't understand is employer stock and something called NUA. I talk about it frequently, net unrealized appreciation. If you have employer stock in a 401k plan, lots of special tax attributes to that, but tax consequences as well. So we want to make sure that you understand that. We don't see it as much anymore because we don't see as many companies doing the employer match with company stock, but we still do see it in some companies. So very important to make sure that you know what that is. Also, before you roll over 401k, how old are you? You know, I talk about ages and how ages can be very important. Were you terminated in the year you turned 55 and you're not yet 59 and a half? Could make a huge difference in your retirement planning and your cash flow. So if you don't know, there are special rules about taking distributions out of retirement accounts. And if you take an early distribution, there's income tax and a 10% penalty, whereas there are certain exceptions. And one of those exceptions is if you turn 55 in the year of termination, that's an exception to the penalty. That applies to a 401k. It does not apply to an IRA. That is not an exception for an IRA. So you may not want to roll that over. Now, if you have adequate resources and, you know, good cash flow, or you get another job, that's a whole nother story. Then I don't worry so much. And rollovers, why those look attractive sometimes is because One, you might not want to leave it with the former employer. Number two, the former employer might not want you to leave the 401k with them. And quite often, employer plans will have a limited menu of investment options, whereas when you're when you have the funds in an IRA, you kind of have the full access to a lot of different options, investment options that could be more attractive for you depending on, you know, what you want to do with your investments. All right. So some of those questions for 401ks, and don't be scared. But even when you know the questions, sometimes you don't always know all of the threads to follow, but that's why you, you know, work with professionals, hopefully, who can help you and understand some of this as well. Let's talk about some taxes and tax questions. Do you understand how tax rates work? Do you? Some people are so afraid of taxes, or they don't like it, or they get stressed out, or they think they understand taxes. I've had a number of people ask me about the proposed tax on unrealized capital gains. So many people have asked about that. They think that they're going to be subject to, you know, if certain administration gets in, they think they're going to be subject to this tax on unrealized gains. You know, that's for billionaires, folks. So most of us don't have to worry about that. I'm not sure if it would even go through, but most of us don't have to worry about that. So taxes can be complicated, but you want to probably inform yourself and kind of get a better understanding about taxes. We have a tax rate system that is tiered. So sometimes people say, oh, I'm in the 25% tax. Well, it's not even 25 anymore. A 24% tax bracket, or I'm in the 32% tax bracket. And they don't realize it's that might not be on all of their money, because number one, we have standard deductions, or we might have itemized deductions. We might have other kinds of credits on our tax return, certain deductions like self-employment tax or health insurance. So certain deductions could help offset the first layer of income. And then we have different tax rates for different tiers of income. And the rates are 10%, 12%, 22%, 24%. It's like a tiered cake. So you have to turn it upside down. The lowest rates are on, you know, the smallest of income. And then as the tiers go up, the taxes go up. But even for married filing joint, we don't get to the 32% tax bracket until $364,000. So if someone makes $364,200, now these are 2023 rates, $365,000, let's say, $365,000 less $364,000, that's only at like $1,000 at 32%. So understand the tiers. It's only on that next marginal. It's the marginal tax rate is what we talk about when we talk about this at work. And you might say to yourself, again, that's only after all the deductions. Then you might have to say to yourself, but now let me look at my tax return and see, is that really true? Because some people will think they're in the 32% tax bracket in my little story here when they're not at all. And they might not be at all, because maybe they were like a multimillionaire and all of their income is qualified dividends or capital gains. Well, then they're not paying those tax rates, because the qualified dividends and the long-term capital gains qualify for a lower tax rate. So you might not even be paying these ordinary income tax rates on the income that you have. And I have seen that a number of times. So I like to look at what I'll tell clients, let's look at the effective tax rate. It might look like you're in a 24% tax bracket, but maybe your effective tax rate might be, you know, 17, because you're getting a tax favored rate on qualified dividends or long-term capital gains. And remember, when you're in the 12% tax bracket, the capital gains tax rate is zero. And I often hear people say, oh, 20% capital gains, 20% capital gains. The 20% capital gains tax rate doesn't hit until you're like close to those top brackets. So it's, for the most part, it's going to be zero or 15% for the most part. So don't get carried away with what you hear people talking about when they're talking about tax rates. You say, let's lift up the hood here and see what we're really paying. And kind of understand tiers and ordinary income tax rates versus capital gains, long-term capital gains tax rates, or qualified dividend tax rates. So understand how tax rates work. Now, here's something you might not think to ask, because most of us don't like to think about dying, of course. But I like to plan, and I like to plan for everything, following threads. So, you know, you may be in a lower tax bracket today, married, filing, joint, but what happens if one of you passes away? That surviving spouse, who maybe will inherit your retirement accounts and your possibly your pension and maybe the higher Social Security, now they're filing single with maybe not quite as much income as they would have had married, filing, joint, because you usually lose one of the spouse's Social Security, obviously. And depending on what pension option someone chose, the pension may go down. But quite often, a surviving spouse will definitely, you know, quite often inherit the retirement accounts, and the required minimum distributions are still going to be on the total amount. So quite often, the surviving spouse may have, you know, some blend of income. But now they're filing single, so they could be in a higher tax bracket. If you think you're going to be in a 22% tax bracket for, you know, a very long time, you might want to say, should I play my 22% tax bracket thinking about my surviving spouse? Because maybe my surviving spouse would have income that would put them in a higher bracket. All right? So just kind of watch out for something like that. We want to plan for tax brackets that you may have in the future as well. Let me quickly do risk management and estate planning because it's scary how fast the show went tonight, and we have to kind of get through some of these. So risk, I don't have any life insurance. Some people say I don't believe in life insurance. That could be true. Maybe not a big deal, but there might be circumstances where you do want to have some life insurance, and maybe it's just term insurance. You don't have to buy whole life insurance. Whole life might be more expensive. Term insurance might be for a shorter period of time, but it might be cheaper. And usually we're trying to insure risks for a short period of time, meaning, you know, while I'm young, couple, married, have a house, have a mortgage, starting with kids, what if something happens to the higher earning spouse and, you know, we have to plan for our kids' education? There could be reasons to have some type of insurance. Blended families, another huge opportunity to use some life insurance that could, you know, protect maybe a blended family. You have, you know, of children from a prior marriage, they're older now, kind of on their own, and now you have a new young family. Well, it doesn't mean you want to totally cut out those children from the prior marriage. Maybe life insurance could help kind of bridge that need that your younger family might need. So kind of understand that. There may be inheritance tax that you might owe. Estate tax would be really, you know, out of the ballpark here, because the federal estate exemption is going up to almost $14 million in 2025. That's $14 million each. Not a lot of people have that size of estate, the general population. So you may not need life insurance for that, but maybe you want to get life insurance to mitigate against state inheritance tax. So ask the question. Same thing with estates. I've talked about this before with guests about don't make an assumption that everything's going to your spouse. That is not necessarily so. If you don't have a will, if you don't have your beneficiary designation set up right, don't make assumptions. And it's scary not to know to ask the question, what if I do not have a will? How will the assets pass for my state of residency? Because if you can't decide, the state will decide. You could have beneficiary designation set up, but what if you have a spouse and you both pass away and you didn't put any contingent beneficiaries on? Now we have a problem if you don't have a will, because the default could be set by the custodian and it would be your estate perhaps. And, you know, it could accelerate the distribution of highly income taxable assets. So folks, I hope I could cover, you know, gave you some kind of hints about questions. Don't be scared to ask and hone your instincts on those types of feelings about asking questions. Don't be afraid. And hopefully it'll help. And next week, we have Bill Henderson. He's going to join me to review the third quarter markets. And of course, next week would also be the election impact. Thank you, James, for being here tonight. Remember, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.